from the election in Italy to the poll in Israel, and the Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, has said he intends to build a broad coalition following his victory this week. Mr. Netanyahu fared worse than expected and lost about a quarter of his seats. He's been talking about power sharing with Yair Lapid, the leader of the centrist party Yesh Atid, which has emerged from the poll as a new force in Israeli politics. Paul Moss says it isn't just the election results which show that Israelis have different views about who should be running the country and what should be done to solve the long-running problems which face it.
The conflict was awfully familiar. The Israelis were arguing with the non-Israelis, and indeed with each other, over who was entitled to what territory. Some were polite, but others more hostile. It was an ugly scene. At one point I thought people might well come to blows, and still they couldn't sort it out. Who was supposed to be in what seat? The plane hadn't even taken off yet, but already flight 2085 from Luton to Tel Aviv had become a microcosm of the Middle East. Some argued from a point of legal entitlement. They held up their boarding passes, the seat number clearly visible. "I have a right to be here," they protested. But others simply pointed out that they had got there first. I felt I'd heard this before somewhere. Meanwhile, bolder passengers were simply shoving their luggage and themselves into the places they wanted. You might call it establishing facts on the ground. They ignored the would-be occupants towering above them, now waving boarding cards in their faces like title deeds to a house. "Sit down," yelled the exasperated air stewardess, sounding like a teacher dealing with unruly children on a school bus trip. But no one was listening to teacher that day. Eventually, the captain's voice came over the intercom, more imploring than commanding. "If you do not take your seat soon," he explained, "we will miss our slot, and takeoff could be delayed by a very long time." In other words, if the fighting continued, everyone would lose. Yeah, well, that kind of reasoning has never seemed to work too well in the Middle East, and it certainly didn't make an impression on Flight 2085. The standoff continued, tensions rose, and so did voices, in English, in Hebrew, and in Russian. I speak only one of those languages, but I'm quite sure I was being treated to a crash course in their finest insults, and for the first time I found myself awfully glad that metal implements are no longer permitted in carry-on luggage. And then she appeared, the heroine of the day. I don't know her name, I guess I never will, but she seemed like Florence Nightingale and Mother Teresa all rolled into one, a clever, sensitive air stewardess who came up with a compromise. "Sit down where you are for now," she said, "and we can sort out who goes where once we're up in the air." Brilliant. The passengers looked at her, they looked at each other, and they meekly obeyed. Those wanting a window seat accepted an aisle. Couples hoping to travel together agreed to be rent asunder. It reminded me of the Oslo Agreement, back in the day when that seemed like a solution to the Middle East problem. Let's all calm down a bit, live in our respective places for now, and sort out the final agreement later on in the day. I thought of telling the stewardess she had missed her métier, that instead of serving gin and tonics to rude passengers, she should be working for the United Nations. She certainly couldn't have made a worse job than others who've tried. I drifted off into a reverie, imagining this diplomatic Wonder Woman circling the globe, perhaps still wearing her EasyJet uniform. She would shuttle between North and South Korea, between the US and Iran, everywhere bringing her homespun approach to international crises. But I soon snapped out of my fantasy, because a while after takeoff, a new problem arose. A group of Orthodox Jews had been given space at the back of the plane to hold a prayer meeting. They bowed, they recited, and in the process they attracted more worshippers, and, who knows, perhaps new worshippers converted to the faith by this stirring display of mid-air religiosity. Eventually there were so many offering their thanks to God they were blocking the aisle, and the non-observant passengers found they couldn't reach the toilet. One unfortunate lady found herself stuck inside the lavatory, pushing on the door but meeting resistance from the mini-congregation now gathered outside. And soon the secular bladders were causing real problems to their owners, who began to complain that the religious people were getting things all their own way. Now, that's a complaint you'll hear in Israel itself, where there have been furious quarrels between zealous followers of God and those of a more sceptical inclination. But here we were having the same battle still more than 1,000 miles from the Holy Land and quite a few 1,000 feet up in the sky. I searched in vain for EasyJet's unappreciated ambassador of peace, the stewardess who had brought unexpected calm to our conflict-ridden flight. but she'd gone back to serving gin and tonics, and it looked like this time she just didn't want to get involved.
And that was Paul Moss, breaking new ground by writing the dispatch before he even arrived. And that's it. More groundbreaking reportage from around the world on Saturday morning.